Thank you, Nick. Welcome, everybody, along to the Dharma Local Hall tonight. We have tonight a fairly select group of people here in the hall. Tonight in Western Australia, we're dealing here with an outbreak of the COVID virus again, so things have been locked down. And even though we could have had some people in the hall tonight, I think most people are being a bit wary about things, and we all have to wear masks. I think I'm allowed to take my mask off, though, as the speaker, so I've done that. So welcome along to those that have come tonight, and also welcome to the people on the internet. Very good to have you along. And also, just to remind everybody again that the care group is now open, ready for anyone that would like to call and talk. We have listeners waiting for your call. And you will see on the bottom of the screen too that not only is there a telephone number there, but now there is also ways of calling from really anywhere in the world. Certainly all of our members are very welcome to call, and really anyone that's that feels an inclination or a desire to want to talk over any issues that you might have. But there is now a way of doing that for free, so we can do that for free on the internet. And I think there's also a WhatsApp telephone number. I don't know too much about WhatsApp myself, but For those of you that do, you can use that number to contact our very willing listeners that are there waiting for your call right now. So this listening service that the Buddhist Society provides is open on Wednesday nights from, say, around 6:30 to 9 o'clock. They're open on Thursday nights and also Saturday evenings. So in any of those times, you're very welcome to call on the care line. And a big thank you too to Louisa, who has just been here earlier. Louisa has managed to get herself a nice job up into the northwest, and she's raced off to catch an aeroplane tonight to go to her new job. So she's very excited about that. But she's also just called in here on the way to be able to set all that up, to make sure that WhatsApp was set up. So a big thank you to Louisa for doing that. So tonight I'd like to really continue a little bit in the vein that I've been talking about for the last times. I know that last week we had a buy, as it were, here. We were forced to close the hall down. Because of the COVID lockdown that was happening here in Perth. We've been very lucky here in Perth, really, over the whole pandemic period in being such an isolated state here in Western Australia. We've got that sort of fortunate situation where the borders can be fairly simply locked down, and the government seems to have done a good job in keeping us all safe from the COVID. So we are very sensitive about it here, so that when things do come up, lockdowns happen fairly quickly. I'm just sort of mentioning this for the people that may be interested who are overseas looking in on all of this. Anyway, I did want to continue tonight with this idea of maturing mindfulness again, which I think is a wonderful topic. And also a way of understanding the factors that sort of go in to make up what the Buddha called this enlightenment, what enlightenment is, and just, you know, where we need to practice to go to understand what this is really all about. And tonight I've called the talk, or named the talk that I'm going to give, as Strange Loops. This might sort of sound a bit odd as a title, but in actual fact, I think it fits in very well, as I'll explain in a minute, just into the way that we do the investigation that we need to do into ourselves help to notice and see just what we need to see in terms of understanding what the Buddha was pointing to with this in this practice as we head towards enlightenment, making our minds peaceful, in fact, developing this peace of mind that we all really, or when you start to twig onto it, when you start to see the benefits of it and the just the absolute joy and beauty and rapture that can come from this practice, you know, you start to really take it up with gusto and start to really understand and work with these things. But Strange Loops comes from a science of what they call chaos theory, and it's really just a very, very simply, it's just the idea of the way systems work. Just when you get aggregated things that come together and work together, you can maybe call that a system, and then just looking at the way that system works as it interacts with other systems. So I sort of base this when I'm looking at all this myself and investigating. Perhaps just before I start, I'll just go back and sort of go over the seven factors of enlightenment again, just so that you can see what I'm talking about here in the context of what the Buddha taught. And the seven factors of enlightenment do start off again with mindfulness. Mindfulness is like the thing that the quality that sort of balances everything out, that makes everything work together so beautifully. It means that we're aware, and we end up being able to practice to be aware quite literally full time. You know, that's really the goal of what it is to be mindful, to be able to really be in the present moment and to live our lives in a state of awareness, just so that we are able to know with the self-reflection that we're able to do, to be able to self-reflect back, just to see what we are doing without getting lost. I mean, most of us will kind of understand that situation we fall into very often, is when we just get lost, you just kind of start living your life, and then all of a sudden you kind of not really aware of what you're doing, what you're saying. And usually when that lack of awareness, when that mindfulness is not there, we're prone to sort of get ourselves oftentimes into trouble. And oftentimes it's also it allows sort of traumas and various troubles and tensions to arise in our life, you know, when we haven't got the awareness to be able to sort of see just exactly what we're saying or doing, so that we end up maybe feeling guilty about something we've said or done, or that we maybe are not aware enough to be sensitive to somebody else, and that can sort of cause issues, and you start to think about it and regurgitate all of these different things that go on in our minds. You know, I trust you'll all kind of know what I'm talking about there. I think this is very much par for the course for the human condition. We do tend to live our lives like that, sort of always continually looking for something new. And even when we get what we want, you know, how long does it last for? It doesn't last for long. And then our minds start to reach out again, starting to grab and grasp onto all different things that we might want to have and to hold, to continue to make our life what we think of as interesting, sort of moving away from boredom or ill, you know, having ill will towards things and trying to move away from things in that way, trying to fill up our lives with distraction, really. And I hope that's sort of not too strong for people to understand, but I see in myself, you know, very much so, that if I don't practice to sort of have some level of awareness or some level of mindfulness with me, my life is very much of a distraction. And of course, if you live your life completely like that, you know, the end of your life comes and, you know, we look at ourselves to try and understand what this life's been about and, you know, realise that we really haven't lived really to our fullest potential. So the Buddha's teachings is very much about being able to live fully to our potential. And this mindfulness is really the first part, in the first factor in these seven factors of enlightenment that allow us to do this. It sort of is a way of balancing things out. So then the second factor is what we, you know, what I'm just started to talk about tonight is really investigation. These are sort of more like the active parts of this, these seven factors, investigation. And then after investigation, there's energy. And then usually once that energy starts to flow and we are starting to become very mindful, very especially when the present moment becomes visible to us and the stillness of mind comes. We've talked a lot about that over the past weeks. And the stillness of mind is just this beautiful place that appears in our mind, just that where it is kind of there's this quality of just being present. And then as we gradually start to understand the joy of doing that, you know, you there's these sorts of feelings start to arise of beautiful energy and rapture, piety, all of these states of very positive states of mind that really compel you to want to sort of go there. And you go there because we really are kind of looking here at a truthfulness. And whenever there is a truthfulness there, we know that we're very close, first of all, to the present moment. And when we are close to the present moment, we know that we are close to truth. When we're living, you know, rather than being in a state of distraction where our mind is pulled out everywhere except the present moment, when we come back to this present moment, we realise that we're sort of very close to truth. And when that truth is there, there's always a beauty that's there in the mind that's so compelling. And that's why these beautiful states arise once you start to see the truth of that and the beauty that comes with it. These kind of beautiful states then start to arise. And then when they do arise, of course, there's what happens then is that the whole body moves into the fourth factor of, or you can start to sort of see the fourth factor of mindfulness, which is the way that the body becomes concentrated and focused, and this samadhi becomes so easy because you're starting to go more and more. It's like a virtuous circle starts to happen. You've got everything sort of working for you, and then you're starting to move towards this concentrated state of samadhi. So that's there in the fourth factor. And then the following one in the the fourth and the fifth factor then becomes a tranquilizing effect, where the mind becomes very tranquil, very peaceful. And this is really just where everything starts to settle. You know, you find that the raptures and the joys that you're starting to experience become a little bit too strong, and the subtlety comes even with more tranquility. And then, of course, the last factor is just the equanimity that comes to balance all of that out, to make it all sort of come together and work. But this second factor of investigation is really what I wanted to come to tonight, in just talking about these strange loops, because when your mind does become still, and it's quite still, you start to become aware that there is this iteration process that's taking place. You start the insight and the wisdom starts to come that all this is happening in the present moment. Obviously, it is obvious that it's all happening in the present moment. But then you start to realise that these conditions of this universe, of yourself, myself, this body, these conditions are beginning and ending, and also beginning and ending in the present moment. And I mean, this is a bit of a paradox to think about, isn't it? I mean, you start thinking about that beginnings and endings all in this present moment. But that's really the way that when you start to look at it, you start to see the truth of that, the truth that this mind is really containing all of this present moment all at once. It's kind of right there, and all the beginnings and endings are just right there in the present moment. So the conditions that begin and then the conditions that end. And I'm sort of saying, we'll certainly do this in a minute with some meditation, because I would like to just sort of steer you towards a little bit of that, just say, even just looking at a breath, just the beginning and the ending of a breath, the beginning and ending of a thought. All these things just come into existence and they finish in the present moment. So this present moment becomes very, a very powerful place to be. You start to see the way that this mind is really what it's understanding, that everything is coming out of this mind, and as is in this mind, is really where the truth is. You start to see that this universe is not something that's out there, it's actually in here. It's inside us. And we start to really see that as a truth. And as I'm saying, these factors start to open up to us, the wonder and the beauty of all of this, the magnificence of just what it is when all of these things come into your awareness as wisdom and insights. You know, it really is quite a wonderful thing, and it's sort of compelling. You can't really stop from going deeper and deeper, looking further and further into just what all of this means. But anyway, just coming back to the way that the stillness works. The Buddha always talked about stillness as beginning and ending countless times, he said, in the wink of an eye. So this still consciousness, once you notice it there in your mind, and it is a very palpable experience, you can certainly feel what stillness is, and again, we'll look at that in a minute. You can certainly feel what that stillness is, but you notice that it's kind of beginning and ending. It's in this loop. It's iterating. So iteration just really means it begins, and then the condition, and then it conditions itself to end, and then that ending conditions the beginning again, and then that beginning conditions an ending again. So it's going round and round and round. This is this stillness. You notice the still mind is doing this, and then you can take that a little bit sort of further and say, look to see that it's actually still consciousness. It's actually our consciousness that is beginning and ending countless times in the wink of an eye, as the Buddha said. And you can really start to see this when you're looking into the stillness. Start to notice just how powerful this is as a practice to be able to understand. So when this starts to work for you, this still consciousness. And you can see it too. It's probably just as accurate to call it emptiness. It's the way that emptiness is there, and you can sort of see that even that is a condition, because it's a condition because it's something that you can objectify. When you're looking at this stillness, it's an object in your mind, so you know that it's not a permanent thing. And this is what the Buddha said about all of existence. You know, the three characteristics he spoke about of all things is, first of all, the dukkha, the fact that it is unsatisfactory. The second characteristic is that all conditions have this impermanence, this impermanent nature to them. And the third characteristic, of course, is anatta, or not self. So this is what, as the stillness starts to arise in your mind, you start to be able to really see this and see the way that all of this works. But then I'm sort of keen to share with you the way that stillness too can aggregate. And the Buddha talked about this in his teaching on the five aggregates, because he's really got the first aggregate is really just the Buddha talked about as just being everything that's physical. He really meant here that everything that has some kind of physical nature to it. This includes our bodies, it includes the universe, any of the elements that sort of make up our bodies, anything at all that comes into existence in the physical world, the whole universe, he really puts into this first category of just rupa, the first kanda he talked about. A kanda is an aggregation. And then he moves from the rupa, and he kind of is looking to see that the next kanda is really then moving from this physical into the mind, because he talks then about the rupa, the rupa, or the aggregation of feeling, just the way that you can feel in your mind. And that's a very complex thing, really, when you look at it, the way that we feel and the way that we sort of sense experience, you know, even just what I'm talking about, they're just understanding and feeling stillness. You know, this is really, it's quite a subtle thing to do, but nonetheless, it's still there, and it can be noticed as an aggregate in this second kanda of feeling. And then the third kanda is really perception. We're still continuing in the mind. The last four of these five kandas are all mind-made things. And then so after feeling, there becomes perception, where we kind of are perceiving, we're noticing things in a certain way. And really this perception is really built up a lot on the way that have been conditioned ourselves, just what our karma is really forcing us, in a way, I suppose you could say forcing, or I don't want to necessarily be so restrictive with it, just that word of force, but the karma, you just sort of follow it along. It's just something that you, unless you've got awareness there, unless you're starting to really do some good self-reflection so that you can stop this process of perception and feeling before it starts, you're pretty much lost into it. You know, it takes you along whether you want to go there or not. So anyway, this third factor of in these aggregates, the way that all of these, this complexity of our lives, the complexity of the universe kind of works together, comes together in this third factor of this third kanda, which is perception. And then the fourth kanda is what the Buddha talked about as movement of mind. So just the mind as it, or consciousness moving, if you like, but just the way that there's this movement of mind. And then the fifth kanda is pure consciousness itself. Now, the way I like to see that and explain that really is that this fifth kanda of consciousness is really, it's really an explanation of just what the mind is. The mind is full of consciousness. And the whole universe really is just full of consciousness. When we look out from our mind into this universe that we perceive to be outside of ourselves, we're kind of bypassing really these very, very subtle aggregations that the Buddha talked about there, as we just sort of fall getting first of all lost in the movement of consciousness, which is the fourth kanda, and then lost into the perception of that movement, which is the third kanda, and then grabbing onto the feelings that come from the perception, which is the second kanda, And then all of a sudden we've got this physical realm, this physical world, this physical body that is there. And then all of a sudden we're kind of trapped in it. We're trapped in this. And it's really the way that the cosmology works in Buddhism is we have this idea then that we're trapped in this samsara, the Buddha called it, this realm of existence. So we've find that we're grasping onto a body and the universe, we're kind of well and truly locked inside this realm of samsara. But again, as I've been saying and even just mentioning tonight too, you know, when we've as a human being and in this human condition, we do have this potential to self-reflect so that we can start to look back on ourselves and start to notice these things. And we can, if you want to, use this investigation of the second factor of enlightenment, use this investigation to start looking at this. You start to sort of see this very clearly, the way that the way that these khandhas work, these aggregations of, you know, like if you look at the, just to give a very simple explanation, if you look at the body itself, you've got, you know, several different components of the body. You know, there's the nervous system, there's the pulmonary system, there's the endocrine system that works. And all these things are working kind of independently, but they're working together to create and make our bodies the way that they are, and make our minds our minds are making it the way they are, and that's probably the right way to say it. Our minds are making it what it is, and then we go on from there to develop the body and the universe that comes from it all. But these systems, they do work like these strange loops. And I just like that term, strange loops, because all the sorts of systems that sort of operate in the world usually have what they call, in physics, they call these things strange attractors. And I don't want to get too complicated into this, but just because it is a very complicated science, actually, chaos theory. But it's, you can just think of something very simple, like a system like a pendulum, you know, that has what they call a single point attractor. It attracts itself right to a single point. So eventually a pendulum will come to rest, come to an equilibrium, because it's pointing to, it's the system is being driven to a single point. But when things become complicated, as you start sort of moving away from these simple systems, you start to get into these more complex systems, and you can sort of think of things like, you know, the very famous one in chaos science is the weather, and you've probably heard about the butterfly effect that they talk about there. And in actual fact, there was a physicist that actually. What he did, it's an interesting story actually, because what he actually did, he went home one night and forgot to turn it, and he set a system running in his computer. And usually he'd been in the habit of, in the past, of sort of rounding off his numbers, the maths that he was putting into the equations that he was using. He used to round them off. But he forgot to do this day. He didn't round them off. And he had these numbers in there that just kept on going. You know, it was a point, dot, 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 you know, went on for quite a long time. And because he's modelling the weather, this man called Lorenz, and he was thinking about and modelling the weather, you know, this is right back in the 50s or something like that, 50s, 60s. And anyway, he went home and left his computer running with all of these numbers still clunking out, and I guess it has to be when computers became big enough to be able to do this, because I mean, we really couldn't do this before computers came along. And when he came into his lab the next morning, he was absolutely astounded to see the pattern that had been created from this complexity of the numbers that had been iterating, you know, going round and round and round in a loop in his computer. And, you know, eventually, as he got the insight from that, eventually he worked out a pattern that sort of describes the weather. And it turned out to be this butterfly, the shape of a butterfly. But there's a, rather than it being a single point attractor like I talked about before, it's actually a very complex attractor. And in chaos science, they call that a strange attractor, because you can't really ever say just where the point of where the system is going to. You can't really ever say that with any certainty. But he did work out a way of kind of approximating where this attracting point was going to be. And consequently, that's now why our weather predictions are so much better, and why they can now predict weather right out to a week or 10 days or that sometimes, because of this this way that he's learned how to understand the way that weather works, just that whole system. And you can imagine just how complex that is, you know, because the standard thing that goes with this attractor is that a butterfly flapping its wings, say, over Perth, if a butterfly flaps its wings there, that might have the potential to cause a hurricane in the Philippines or Indonesia or somewhere. Such is the complexity of just each individual effect of the system. So very, very complex systems I'm sort of talking about here, but that's exactly how it is for our bodies and our minds too. They're very, very complex systems. And we start to, as you start to sort of see and appreciate the way that this iteration is happening in the present moment, how things begin and end right here in the present moment. Things loop out, come back and begin again in the present moment. It's always the present moment that's the most important and most relevant thing for us to sort of see and understand here, that things are literally, really beginning and ending in this present moment. So, I mean, you know, I'm not even sort of going to go to questions of time and all of that, but physicists do that, of course. They kind of look at you know, Einstein's work with relativity and with space and time. And we know that time is a very, in fact, you know, it's an interesting story with Einstein too, because Einstein kind of realised that he could cross the whole universe in no time at all if he just sort of could hitch a ride on a photon of light. He realised he could traverse the universe in no time. I mean, these are very complex things to think about. I mean, I'm not suggesting that you need to sort of think about things like this, but I'm really only just pointing to all of this to illustrate what I'm talking about here about with strange loops and just why I've chosen this topic tonight. Because this complexity that's inside this iteration that is going on constantly in our minds picks up all of this complexity. But yet it is so easy, really, with self-reflection, just to let it all go, let it be. Too, just to, you know, as I've said so often here, and just even, I'm just going to get myself a little glass of water, because I'm just feeling a bit, parched. It's probably because I'm talking about chaos theory. I always get nervous when I talk about this because it's, I feel like I'll bore the pants off everybody. But it is a very interesting topic, I think. It is for me anyway. I kind of love to I do love to think about it. But anyway, so as meditators and as people in this human condition, and when we can kind of do this process of self-reflection, as Ajahn Brahm kind of teaches us when we go down to Jhana Grove, you know, you see how relatively simple it is to just make your mind still enough to be able to just see your body and the universe just drop away in the jhanas. You know, that's why he's absolutely called this, he's the retreat centre that the Buddhist Society has down in Serpentine, Jhana Grove, But these jhanas are states of mind where the stillness becomes so apparent and so powerful that you can absorb into them and drop your body and the mind and the whole universe, just drop it away, drop it off. And then as you're starting to really work with that and understand that process, you're really starting to see what the Buddha was pointing to there, just exactly just where this world is. Where this world is in fact in our minds. This is a mind-made world, a mind-made universe. So, and you know, the Buddha's in the very first verse of the Dhammapada, you know, he talks about that mind is chief, mind is the forerunner of all things. So, as we're sort of moving towards that stillness, that still consciousness, and moving past the iteration of the complexity of these strange loops that are there supporting everything that we see out there and deluding us, really, making us, you know, because we're all, and I'm not saying this either in a way to make us all feel stupid or you know, not, because I mean, the fact is that we are, you know, this human condition of Dennis here, you know, it needs, you know, Dennis needs to eat food, needs to kind of drink water. We know, you know, I'm part of this earth. And all of that, you know, that's apparently real. It is real because, you know, I've in the it would be a very stupid thing to think, oh, you know, the universe is inside me, so I'm going to deny the body or the mind. That's not how the Buddha taught. In fact, when you look at his life, though, he kind of went through those processes himself because he did come from a prince in a kingdom, didn't he? Where he probably lived the life of Riley there in the palace with everything that he wanted and everything, probably the best that the country had to offer. And then he went on his journey as a monk, and when he realised that he was getting nowhere, kind of sort of relying on that conditioning, he decided to go to the opposite extreme of denying himself, denying his body. And he became very good at that. He established quite a few followers around that kind of, when he was denying what he was denying his body just by not feeding it properly and, you know, probably wearing hair shirts. And, you know, you even see some people do that now, sort of thrashing themselves and doing all of that. But after a while, he realised that that wasn't very wise either. And he decided to come back to this middle way, the middle way between extremes. He thought, I'll try that, the middle way between extremes. And he built up his emaciated body from that point. It's interesting, if ever you've been to Bangkok, there's these, in the Golden Temple, there's this whole range of Buddha statues that are around, but there's quite a few Buddha statues there that sort of depict the Buddha in this emaciated state, you know, when he was so thin and so weak. You know, it's said that he could put his hand in his stomach and feel his backbone. You know, he was so, he'd sort of thrashed himself so much. So he moved away from these extremes and decided to, you know, live to treat his body well, to treat his mind well, accept himself for who he was, and then gradually just starting to let all of that go. And you can really only let that go when you accept the way that it is. It's not just possible to deny it all, because we are, you know, this world is an apparent reality for us. You can't just deny it. We are trapped and we're caught in this realm of samsara. And, you know, it's the last time that I spoke here. I spoke towards the end of the talk just even about consciousness itself. That's also in this realm of samsara, consciousness itself. Because eventually, as the Buddha was pointing to, you can actually start to see that the consciousness itself also will finish. And just to start to get to understand and see that is really very, very powerful, a powerful process, and you know, and really is right in the heart of where the Buddha was teaching. Of course, when he was actually asked what enlightenment was, he's always said to have maintained a noble silence. He would never ever speak words about that, because it's impossible to, you know, once you try and make some sort of commentary around what that is, you've just lost it immediately. It can only be something that you know. So you start to see that this knowing is really very important part of this process of learning how to work with yourself. Just this, the knowing in the mind is beyond any commentary, beyond any beyond any thinking process that works, beyond any process of mind that is creating things like that. Knowing is a thing that's really just associated only with the present moment. So, I've said a lot of words there. Is there anyone in the hall that would like to ask a question just before I move on? Because we'll move on, and I want to try and sort of introduce some of this into the meditation that we're going to do tonight. So, are you happy for us all to move on and we'll do some meditation? You can always ask questions afterwards too, if you like. So I know that this session tonight, we only really try to keep it going for about an hour or so, but you're always very welcome to ask questions about any of this. So that's strange loops. So now we'll just do some meditation. And I'll just guide you in this, and maybe guide you through with just some of the things that are relevant that come up from the talk, and just in the way of using self-reflection well, and just noticing what's there in your mind. So, usually best just to have your right hand on the left, and just thumbs and fingers just touching, so that you can feel the. If you can, just feel the tingling that's in the tips of your fingers. It's always nice to feel that sensitivity in your nervous system there. If you can notice that. Nice straight back with a curve in your back, just nicely set. Head pointing to the top of the head, pointing to the ceiling, and close your mouth and close your eyes. And just let your tongue rest on the palate. And just taking some breaths, and just making that firm conviction that we're just going to sit with this meditation, say for the next 20 minutes to half an hour. And then I'd like just to start with a bit of a sweep through the body, just so that you can anchor yourself into your body. And just really get to know yourself well. So you can just start at your toes. You might just need to give them a wiggle, or just feel them in your socks or against the floor. You can pick a toe, a particular toe if you like, little toe, big toe. Just feel it. And then just let your attention run over the arch of your foot and into your heels. And then up through the articulation of your ankles, into the shins and the calves. And as usual, I always like just to stop and notice the difference between the front and the back of that lower leg, just the way that your shins are so hard and bony, and the calves are essentially floppy. seeing if you can notice that. And then just moving your attention up through the knees, into the upper legs, the thighs. Just becoming aware of those big muscles there in your thighs, and then moving onto your bottom. And just the pressure that might be there as you're sitting, seated. Then up into the tummy and the lower back. And you can always spend a fair bit of time around here if you like, just examining just the internal going on there. There's usually a lot of rumbling and movement and little rushes and gurgling that's going on and around in there. Then moving up into the chest and the upper back area, just feeling your shoulder blades. And round your chest, just the rhythms that are going on in there. And just allowing yourself now to just fully relax. If you need to sort of move or just shift anything a bit, just do that now and just let your body fall into a relaxed position. And the arms hanging down by your sides, bent at the elbows, through to the forearms, into the wrists and the hands and the fingers. And I like to point out too, just with the fingers, if you can, now that your sensitivity is starting to become more refined, you can perhaps notice the tingling that's there in your fingers. And then just maybe even move to notice that that same tingling is there all over your body, all over your skin. It doesn't matter if you can't notice that completely now, but just be aware that that tingling is really it's a sign that your body is starting to relax. Just noticing that, just allowing your sensitivity to become subtle enough just to notice that, means that your body is relaxing. And moving up into your neck, into your head, behind your eyes, and any parts there that are just have any tension at all, just allow that tension to relax. And just noticing your body, the way that it's grounded, when the way that we're sitting, the seated on your seat or on the cushion, just wherever you are there, just noticing the way that you're being grounded into the earth. You can sort of feel essentially the field lines of gravitational field lines sort of anchoring you to the earth. And you can imagine in your mind's eye just the way that that is in itself looping back right through to the center of the earth and holding you onto the earth. We're grounding ourselves, earthing ourselves. We are part of this earth. We eat up all of the vegetables and the proteins of the earth to keep ourselves healthy and then excrete them out again and recycle it all. I'm just feeling that sense of groundedness and earth. And then maybe even just allowing your attention to sort of move up into space a little bit more, out into the universe itself. And maybe even just even having gratitude for the sun, the way that the sun keeps us as we are, so essential for our life. Even the way the moon goes around the earth, causing the tides and causing movements in our own body. And then just allowing your appreciation to go right out into the universe. And the realization that all of the elements that are inside your body come from space, they come from stars. So as we're sitting here, grounded, earthed, and connected into the universe, we can just know that this is who we are. This is how it is. As mysterious and as wondrous as the whole process is. And we can start to become quite peaceful with all of that. And then when you're feeling relaxed enough, you can just start to turn your attention to your mind. And hopefully you'll notice that your mind is already quite still, quite relaxed. You know, you can hear the words that are being spoken, but there's no need to make a commentary on them, no need to try and understand them, because your knowing just knows. And you can start to notice what that stillness is feeling like. Notice how the hindrances, there's five hindrances that the Buddha talked about, but just noticing that desire and aversion are now abating. And what's left in your mind now is just beautiful stillness. And there's a contentment with just that much. No need to commentate or make a commentary at all. Just allowing yourself to be. And you can notice that the third and the fourth hindrance of restlessness and sloth and torpor or tiredness, both of those extremes too have abated. So your energy is nicely balanced right now. And that combines with a contentment that's there as your mind is just starting to settle and relax and moving away from any grasping of desires or pushing away of aversions, things you don't like. It's just resting in contentment, balanced with beautiful energy. This is what it feels like to be still. We're starting to look directly at pure consciousness. And you can just allow that contentment and that balance to relax you even deeper. So that you can absorb more fully into the stillness. And just starting to notice the beauty of that stillness, just the way that it feels to be so content, so balanced. Because we are moving towards the present moment. We're uncovering the present moment. And we start to get an idea of the beauty and the joy and the rapture. And this comes about really just because of the stillness. The stillness is always there. It's a quality that's never ever not there. It's when we come back to look at the first factor of enlightenment, we can see that being mindful of the stillness is a very balanced way to see the human condition. We're not being pulled out into extremes. The mind is relaxing. And the more it relaxes, the more stillness that you can appreciate. The more we start to develop insight and wisdom. In a moment, I'm going to ring the bell just to signal the end of the meditation. But what I'd like you to do, just as we're ending the meditation, though, is that when you come back to the hall, see if you can bring that quality of stillness back with you. Just notice what it feels like now. And bring it back with you. Because you will notice that the stillness gives us a good idea of the way our senses work. You can notice the sound of my words coming into your ears as your consciousness goes out to contact the sound. And you can just notice the way that it just begins and it ends. Especially if I emphasize those beginnings and endings. But when you come back to the hall, when you come back to this room, just try to notice the same thing with all of your other senses. When you open your eyes and you have seeing consciousness back, notice it with tasting consciousness, smelling consciousness, and feeling consciousness. So that those five bodily senses all work with the consciousness of your mind. And just notice the way that they do begin and end, the way that they loop, these strange loops. All beginning and ending right here and now in the present moment. So once again, I hope you all got a bit of a sense of that stillness, the stillness of mind there in that meditation. And really just the way that we do use our meditation to investigate this second factor of the enlightenment, So starting with mindfulness and then moving into the second factor where we do investigate, work to understand this body and this mind. And just to notice how the stillness allows the wisdom and the insight to sort of to make all of this understandable. I mean, it's a very normal thing, I think, when we, you know, if we have got any particular problem, oftentimes, you know, you will notice that if you go for a walk in nature or you just put it aside for a moment or just sort of come back to it after a while, just make your mind still. You know, oftentimes the problem that you might be thinking about becomes solved because the stillness has this remarkable power of being able to work its magic, really, and just helping us understand, because the stillness is allowing us to get under these conditions, under the way that we distract ourselves with conditions, to be able to really fully understand and appreciate just what it is that we're involved in here, just what samsara is, and the way that the Buddha's teachings work to bring our minds to peace, and just the joy and the beauty of just what that means. So I'll leave my remarks there and thank you all for your patient listening, and we'll bid you farewell for tonight's Wednesday midweek meditation. I'm not sure what's going to happen next week yet, but because I won't be here next week, but I will be back the following week with Louisa. So I'm sure that the meditation class will continue on, but we'll just see what happens anyway for next week. So you're very welcome to come and join us for a cup of tea over in the kitchen area there. I know that Ron probably will have brought in some lovely little snacks, little knickknacks and snacks for tonight. So if there are any questions, I'm certainly very happy to respond to anything that you might want to ask. But we'll perhaps just pay our respects to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, and I'll bid you good night.